Hello everyone, and welcome to Azul's second quarter 2022 results conference call. My name is Hannah, and I will be your operator for today. This event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode until we conduct a question-and-answer session following the company's presentation. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. I would like to turn the presentation over to Thais Haberli, Head of Investor Relations. Please proceed.
Thank you, Hannah, and welcome all to Azul's second quarter earnings call. The results that we announced this morning, the audio of this call, and the slides that we reference are available on our IR website. Presenting today will be David Neeleman, Azul's founder and chairman, and John Rogerson, CEO. Alex Malfitani, our CFO, Abhi Shah, our Chief Revenue Officer, are also here for the Q&A session. Before I turn the call over to David, I'd like to caution you regarding our forward-looking statements. Any matters discussed today that are not historical facts, particularly comments regarding the company's future plans, objectives, and expected performance, constitute forward-looking statements. These statements are based on a range of assumptions that the company believes are reasonable, but are subject to uncertainties and risks that are discussed in detail in our CVM and SEC files. Also, during the course of the call, we will discuss non-IFRS performance measures, which not should be considered in isolation. With that, I will turn the call over to David.
Thanks, Thais. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our second quarter 2022 earnings call. As always, I would like to start by thanking our crew members for taking care of each other and our customers on more than 1,000 daily flights. Abhi tells me that number is going to 1,000 flights by October. Amazing. Thanks for our crew members' dedication. We've achieved record second quarter results in what is seasonally the weakest quarter of the year. I'd like to remind you that Azul is one of the fastest and most profitable recoveries in the world and is the only airline I know of to deliver top-line revenue 50% above pre-pandemic levels. We continue to strengthen Brazil's largest network. Since 2019, we've added 35 new destinations. We're the only carrier in 80% of the routes and we serve and are the leader in terms of departures in 88% of our markets. Our future growth will continue this laser focus on our network and what makes us strong. Our service to over 150 destinations contribute significantly to Brazil's development by providing opportunity, employment, trade links, and promoting tourism all over the country. Our network's capillarity is unique and supported by a flexible fleet, enabling us to deploy the right aircraft in the right market at the right time, as you can see on slide four. As you can also see on slide four, we ended the quarter with the largest fuel-efficient fleet in the region, representing 70% of our ASKs. This reinforces our environmental commitment and our ability to grow efficiently and profitably. We could not be more enthusiastic about the continued runway ahead in our fleet transformation program. The continued upgauging of the next generation aircraft will drive down costs and resulting in higher margins. More news will be coming next week on the fleet transformation program, new developments. Before I hand it over to John, I want to end on slide five by showing you why I'm so proud of this team. We ended the quarter as the most on-time airline in the Americas and the third most on-time in the whole world. Our customer satisfaction scores are industry-leading and higher than they've ever been. All this while generating 19% more ASKs when compared to 2019, serving more than 150 destinations. And finally, a more efficient airline that is generating 11% more ASKs per FTE than before, a truly incredible achievement by the entire team. I'm confident about the future of Brazil's aviation market, our ability to grow profitably, all the while creating the best experience for our crew members and customers. We have created an incredible business that is generating billions and billions of cash flow from operations, and the best is yet to come. With that, I'll turn the word over to John to give you more details on the second quarter results.
Thanks, David. I also want to thank our crew members. As a result of their incredible work, we're able to share these great results with you today. As you can see on slide six, the second quarter proved once again the strength of our business. Our top line revenue more than doubled compared to the same period last year, reaching 3.9 billion reais, an all-time record revenue for any quarter in our history. Even more impressive is that revenue was up 50% compared to pre-pandemic levels in what is seasonally the weakest quarter of the year. This achievement was a direct result of the strong demand environment in our network. PRASK and RASK grew 57% and 44% respectively, even with a 60% growth in our total capacity year over year. We were encouraged by the revenue performance in the second quarter and continue to see positive trends in yields and bookings going forward. As you can see on slide 7, our EBITDA reached $615 million in the quarter, representing a margin of almost 16%. If we used hedge accounting, our EBITDA would have been $880 million in the quarter, 20% above the same period in 2019. Let me repeat, including our fuel hedging gains, our EBITDA for the quarter was higher than 2019. This is including the 112% increase in jet fuel prices and the 26% devaluation of the local currency. While we're seeing a very positive trend in revenues, we also continue to efficiently manage our costs. As you can see on slide 8, productivity measured in ASKs per full-time employee increased 43% compared to the same period last year and 11% versus second quarter 2019. Fuel consumption per ASK dropped 3% versus last year and 10% versus second quarter 2019. Our fleet today is 10% more fuel efficient than 2019 and will continue to get more efficient going forward. Compared to second quarter 2021, CASK ex fuel decreased 12%, mainly driven by our fleet transformation, cost reduction initiatives, and productivity gains. We made a promise to you that we would emerge as a more efficient airline, and that is exactly what we're doing. On slide 9, you can see that our immediate liquidity increased by $530 million during the quarter without a capital raise, driven by our strong operational performance. Our operating cash inflows surpassed our outflows by more than $2 billion. Total liquidity remained strong at $7 billion, and we ended the quarter with $4 billion in immediate liquidity, even after paying down $1.7 billion in leases, loans, deferral payments, interest, and capital expenses. As you can see on slide 10, we reduced our leverage in the quarter by 1.5 points to 6.2, which puts us in a good position to finish the year starting with a 5. Our leverage is the lowest in the region, even when using 7x rent when accounting for operating leases. As a reminder, Azul has the largest fleet of new next generation aircraft in the region. And since rent and lease liabilities increase as newer aircraft enter your fleet, that effect is already reflected in our numbers. On slide 11, you could see the strong booking trends continued through the quarter. Our network advantages allowed us to quickly adjust fares to the volatile cost environment. This trend continues, and what we're seeing now is bookings and revenue coming in at record high average fares. On slide 12, you can see how these positive trends set us up so well for the rest of the year. It's fair to say that demand for Azul's products and services has never been stronger. As I mentioned, we're currently seeing bookings at high average fares, the highest in our history, in fact. This combined with the recent favorable movements in currency and fuel gives you a sense of the operating leverage and margin opportunities for the rest of 2022 and into 2023. Moving on to slide 13, our business units, Azul Cargo, Tudo Azul, and Azul Viagens, further extend our competitive advantages. These fast-growing, high-margin businesses contribute to expand our industry-leading margins by leveraging the strength of our network and the flexibility of our fleet. Our cargo business continues to perform extremely well, with revenue almost tripling compared to 2019. Tudo Azul maintained a strong growth pace during the second quarter, with gross billings ex-Azul up an impressive 60% year over year. Finally, Azul Viagens had a remarkable quarter. Revenue increased 70% compared to 2019, benefiting from the expansion of our dedicated flights. For this upcoming summer season, for example, we will operate 2,000 flights exclusively for Azul Viagens. Each of these business units had a record revenue quarter, and each one is on pace to generate well over $1 billion in bookings just this year. Moving to slide 14, another important development during the quarter was the decision by the regulatory agency ANAC regarding the slot distribution at the Congonhas Airport. The combination of this new rule, along with an increase in capacity ahead of its privatization, is very positive in encouraging competition at the airport, directly benefiting Azul customers. We believe that through these initiatives, Azul may more than double its daily departures at this airport over the next few years. To wrap up on slide 15, I couldn't be proud of our entire Azul team. We are running an incredible operation, as David noted. We're the most on-time airline in the Americas. Our customers love to fly us, and our crew members love their work. We're executing on our fleet transformation plan, and the demand environment has never been stronger. Our business units are all producing record revenues, and we are emerging as a more efficient airline. We're truly excited about the opportunities ahead of us. With that, we'll turn it over for your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star key followed by the number one key on your touchtone phone now. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star two. For those following the call via webcast, you may post your questions on the platform, and they will be either answered during this call or by the Azul Investor Relations team after the conference is finished. Our first question comes from Savi Syth with Raymond James.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'm just curious if you could share any color on the corporate demand recovery side and just the health of leisure demand. I am trying to understand, you know, just how sustainable, you know, the fare levels and the, maybe the momentum that John talked about is here.
Yeah, hey, Savi, I'll be here. Yeah, absolutely. Look, overall, we were very happy with the performance in second quarter. You know, increasing RASK 25.5% on a 19% ASK increase, you know, is obviously a very strong indication of demand levels. And actually, what's even more exciting is what we're seeing right now. So just the last 2 weeks, for example, as people have come back post-July holidays, the average fares the last 2 weeks have been the highest in our history in terms of the bookings. Which has been very, very strong. It's been corporate and leisure. And so I'll give an example. Our vacations business, Azul Viajens, actually had higher bookings in July than it did in June, even though July is the month that you actually travel, which is a really good indication that the leisure market is strong and is already looking ahead to the second half of the year and the summer season. Corporate as well is doing, is coming back strong. We are right now over 100% in corporate revenue, between 100 and about 130% in corporate revenue. Breaks down to about 80% in corporate volume and plus 50% in corporate average fares. So even with that great performance, there's still more corporate volume recovery that's going to happen in the second half of the year, which is seasonally the strongest. Lots of events. Our group's revenue is right now the highest it's ever been. Our small and medium business revenue is higher than it's ever been. So a lot of great events happening second half of the year and a lot of corporate movement. And if you look at the ABRA Corp data, which is the corporation of the Association of Corporate Travel Agencies, in June, we had the highest revenue of the three airlines in ABRA Corp. And our average fare, which already was the highest, actually grew the most as well. And so, and even when you include that, we had an 81.8% load factor in July. So we're not seeing any traffic pressures in terms of having to sacrifice fares to get traffic for the foreseeable future. And in fact, I think, you know, what we're talking internally with our teams is let's keep testing the market. Let's see how much more there is in terms of demand, how much more there is in terms of average fares, because the average fares that we are seeing are very, very strong and demand looks to be very sustainable. So, you know, I think everything is set up really well. And finally, if you compare our average fares to the last week of February, which was the week before the war, heating oil is 15% above, the dollar is 2% down, and our fares are 52% above. And that gives you an idea of, given the seasonality, given this bookings and fare momentum and the macroeconomic support, you know, how much we can improve kind of going forward.
That's very helpful and encouraging. If I might, you know, I realized that there was no EBITDA update in this call. I'm just curious. I know things have been volatile, and that's maybe a moving target given the moving parts, but curious if you have any updated thoughts there and any financing thoughts related to that.
Yes, Avi, you know, we debated it pretty heavily, and obviously fuel was up a lot in the second quarter, and in these recent fuel price movements, you know, there's a lag in when they kind of come off and we see the benefit. But we just kind of want to reiterate the amazing revenue performance we're having right now, and we feel as strong as ever about this business going forward. And so nothing has fundamentally changed. You know, is it going to be $4 billion? Is it going to be slightly below that? You know, it's we're not that far away. We still have half the year to go, and we feel very strong about the business overall. We just didn't want to put a number out there, given that we're 45 days away from an election and things like that. But nothing's fundamentally changed in our business. We feel very strong about where we are today. And I think that, you know, that sets us up nicely for 2023 and beyond. And so we feel very good. I think the cash flow generation that we had in the quarter is a testament to just how strong this business is overall. And I think a lot of people were concerned about that and, you know, focus on that. You know, there's a lot of positive things in the seasonally weakest quarter of the year with, you know, fuel prices that have never been seen before in Brazil, right? Remember, when fuel was at $140 a barrel, you know, 14 years ago, you know, the real was at 2-1. You know, now the real is at 5-1. And so we've been able to significantly increase fares.
Yes, Avi, this is Alex. You know, we see, and I think a lot of you agree, and we see that in the models, this is essentially a steady state 30% EBITDA business, right? You know, we see it when we talk to you. Some of you have us in the high 20s. Some of you have us in the low 30s, but obviously not this year, right? And I think that's the challenge. You know, we know that steady state, we are a business that can generate that much EBITDA, that much operational cash. And with our size today, that would actually mean about 5 billion reais of EBITDA in the year. But it is admittedly hard, you know, with everything that's going on with fuel, you know, with what we had, you know, 2 years of a pandemic, of kind of nailing down exactly how much of that recovery and how much of our full kind of, you know, profitability potential we can generate within a calendar year. And when things happen like we had, you know, on the day of our last earnings call, when we had the, you know, Russian invasion, you know, things shift around, right, as you mentioned. So, like John said, we discussed a lot. It's really about EBITDA. I mean, everything else in our guidance is very much on track. And, you know, probably our full, you know, EBITDA generation capability has shifted, you know, 3 or 6 months to the right. But the business remains very solid, and we're proving that we can pass through cost increases to fares. We prove that we can access cash. And I think that's all clear in our Q2 financials.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Abby.
The next question comes from Josh Milberg with Morgan Stanley.
Hey, everyone, and thank you for the call, and also congrats on the results. And this relates a little bit to Savi's question on the funding side, but related to the $1.7 billion you highlighted in payments of leases, deferrals, and other items, I just wanted to ask if you could touch on, you know, what you're expecting over the remainder of the year, and also the potential for new deferrals of payments to lessors and to suppliers. And if you could, in a little more detail, and I think this question is for Alex, just give an update on you know, the different funding options that you're looking at today, and also touch on the status of the code share with United. If you could, you know, address that,
yeah,
that would be great.
Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about United. Josh, I think a lot of this is a bit of a circular reference, right? Because I think we've demonstrated that we'll adapt to whatever, you know, conditions are thrown at us. If we generate more EBITDA, you know, we can spend all of the CapEx that we, you know, want to spend, that we would like to spend to prepare for the future, and we don't need to access, you know, significant cash from banks or suppliers. If we generate less EBITDA, then we can adjust on the CapEx side, and we can certainly access cash if we need to. Obviously, you know, and that's not even including the capital markets, right? If the capital markets were available to us, which today we don't think they are, that's sort of the main avenue, the main source of capital. But, you know, if we do need cash more than we expect, and if the capital markets are not available to us, which at some time they will be, then, you know, we'll adjust. And, you know, we demonstrate, I think, this quarter that we can access capital from our banks. You know, we can maintain our payables around 100 days, which is the guidance that we gave you pretty much in the beginning of the pandemic, right? That, you know, payables would go up because we got a lot of support from our partners, but then they would gradually converge down to 100, which is roughly where they are today. You know, they can go up maybe 10 days, go down about 10 days, but you know, we know that's a reliable source of working capital. And then, you know, we know that we can count on our suppliers because our suppliers can count on the heavy operational cash flow generation that we have. You know, they make a lot of money by supporting Azul. You know, we can make a lot of money together going forward. And so we know that we can access. So the answer, you know, Josh, I think is, you know, I think it's more on in the past than in the future because we got, you know, all the forecasts wrong. We underestimated how quickly demand could come back. You know, nobody saw, you know, what could happen with oil prices and with the war in Europe. So it's hard for us to predict in the future what is going to happen and what will need to happen. But I think it's clear from the past, and especially from this quarter, that whatever happens, we will be able to access whatever cash we need.
Hey, Josh, I just want to reiterate a couple points. You know, this business is generating billions of operating cash flow. We showed a number today of $4 billion in cash and immediate liquidity if you include our receivables. More than double what it was in 2019, right? And so we've positioned ourselves in a very good position going forward. We, you know, if I were to tell you we were going to be up 50% compared to 2019 in the year 2020 or 2021, you would have thought I was smoking something, right? And so we delivered way above the expectations of any analyst in terms of revenue. And we feel very strong about our business going forward. And so, you know, I think we're very bullish, and I think our partners are as bullish as ever on Azul. And, you know, I think the way we, you know, showed cash flow generation in the second quarter, it beat everybody's model as well. And so we feel very strong about our ability to execute. Remember, Josh, we went through a period of 8 months with no revenue, right? And we got through it. You know, we had our crew members, everybody kind of rallied around. This is a fantastic business that's delivering great results, delivering unbelievable on-time performance, that's got crew members engaged. So we feel very good about our business on a go-forward basis. And so, you know, cash will take care of itself as we continue to run a great operation and continue to raise revenue. As for United Airlines, United's been a great partner of ours. They've been a partner for a long time. We're still talking to them, but there's also other great partners out there that we're talking to. You know, we see what's happening with, you know, JetBlue and Fort Lauderdale with Spirit. Really important partner of ours as we add our international flights into Fort Lauderdale, right? There's a lot of feed that comes in there that strengthens our long haul network. And so, you know, we're going to continue talking to our partners, but the code share with United stays in place. And I think they're happy with it. We're happy with it.
Okay, great. Thank you for all of that color.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Alejandro Zamacona with Credit Suisse.
Thank you. Hi, David, John, Harry, Alex, Thais. Thank you for taking my questions. Regarding pricing and yield environment, I mean, is it fair to expect an even stronger yield for the second half, considering that there is usually a lag to reflect the higher jet fuel costs? And also, do you have any expectations beyond what we can see in 22, considering that eventual cost normalization in fuel?
Yeah, hi, Alejandro. You know, regarding the pricing environment, you know, good bookings at high fares will lead to, you know, great flown revenue at high fares. And also we're supported by the seasonality second half of the year. So in terms of flown revenue, yes, it is very much possible that you will see higher yields and higher average fares in 3Q and 4Q. And that's certainly what we're booking towards. And the seasonality, the corporate recovery, the demand environment, all of the economic activity that will happen in Brazil over the next 6 months definitely points to that. So it's a, you know, we are getting into our peak season, our spring and summer, which is historically the best seasons of the year, which is very, very supportive of this current pricing environment and even a further improvement in the pricing environment.
Yeah, and on the cost side, as you know, there is a lag between, you know, what we're seeing on the screen in terms of oil prices and the currency and the price that we pay for jet fuel. So, you know, July and August jet fuel prices will probably be, you know, our peak from what we can see right now. But then you will see a downward trend in jet fuel prices, you know, assuming everything stays the way it is or even if things improve from where they are, right? So we could have a very favorable environment in the second half with, you know, fares going up due to the strong demand environment and the positive seasonality, and fuel prices going down from, you know, the improvement that we have already seen taking place.
Sure, yeah, okay. And then my second question, if I may, in terms of capacity, do you have any preliminary expectation for 2023?
Yeah, we haven't closed our plan yet, but you can expect something similar to what we're going to do in 2022 versus 2019. You know, we expect to finish this year between 10 and 12% over 2019. So possibly something similar 2023 over 2022.
Do you mean something similar in terms of the capacity in terms of 2019 or in terms of growth?
Oh, no, 2023 versus 2022 will be similar with
growth
2022 versus 2019.
Yeah, so somewhere in the low teens, I think, you know, would be what you know, kind of a working assumption. We still need to nail it down, and you know, we'll see if we provide some firmer guidance. But I think that's a with our fleet transformation, you know, if you remember. You know, we're going to be essentially replacing still a lot of old generation jets with next generation jets. They have more seats, they have lower rent, and they burn less fuel than the old generation aircraft. So we can increase capacity by keeping the fleet essentially stable. You will see more seats flying. We can get higher utilization of these assets. And we could even, you know, stimulate fares with the lower unit cost that those aircraft will provide. So it's something we're very excited about. And you know, most of our growth comes from that, from the upgauging. And most of the growth, if not all of the growth, happens in the markets where we are strong, right? It's in the Azul network. It's not kind of stealing share from other competitors. It's really upgauging in the routes that we already fly.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Pablo Monsiver with Barclays.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. I have a quick question on the lease payables. I mean, I see the number that you provided in your financial statements, but I just, for modeling purposes and cash flow purposes, I wanted to see if that's the right number we should think about, or I remember that there were some deferred payments that we have to take into consideration, and you have already talked about some negotiation with the lessors. Can you just shed some light on in terms of lease payments for next year? Thank you.
Sure. I think, you know, the way I think the easiest way to think about it, Pablo, is our steady state, you know, rent under current size and current foreign exchange is roughly kind of 3.2 billion reais. You'll see that this year we're actually going to pay more than that because we had, you know, we had the second wave negotiation with lessors, you know, where, you know, the first time when we negotiated with lessors, we negotiated a big number with a big extension because obviously there was a big impact from the pandemic, from COVID-19, but we didn't assume a second wave, right? When the second wave happened, we negotiated a shorter deferral for a shorter period of time, which was essentially shifting some rents from 2021 into 2022. So in 2022, we're already paying more than that 3.2, and we're paying roughly what we're going to pay in 2023 because in 2023, we start paying the first deferral of leases, which will increase our steady state leases by about 500 to 600 million reais, right? So, you know, essentially we're paying about 3.8 this year, and we should be paying around 3.8 next year as well. That's roughly, I think, a good way to model, you know, the annual rent payment.
Perfect. And I have another question, if I may. I mean, the questions we have asked a lot about the sustainability of your yields, and they have been actually very impressive. How are you seeing the competitive environment? I mean, are the other guys actually following you? Are you seeing like a rational behavior, or do you think that some of your competitors may take advantage of just charging low fares to be more competitive and steal some of market share? Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Pablo. You know, I think the industry overall is pretty competitive. I think that all of the competitors, all of the airlines are trying to do what's right. I think mostly within their own networks and within, you know, their strengths. And I think that, you know, what the industry has achieved in terms of fares since the start of, you know, end of February has been great and remarkable, actually. You know, we have the benefit that we are alone in so much of our network, so we can always do it ourselves if we need to, and we do those changes all the time. So we are less dependent on them in controlling our own destiny. But I would say that overall, the industry has been pretty disciplined. And, you know, I think we'll continue to be so. I think we're all looking for good results here.
And Pablo, I would just want to add, you know, we're in a hostile fuel environment, and the guy that has the most next gen aircraft is in a privileged position, right? And so, you know, if you say 70% of our ASKs are coming from NEOs and E2s, and our competitors, you know, are significantly less than that, you know, significantly less than that. They need higher fares, right? And so I think that, you know, we don't see anybody kind of doing crazy things, going after market share, because it's not in their best interest to do it, because they would bleed significantly because they don't have the right aircraft type, kind of given the hostile fuel environment where we are today.
Super clear. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dan McKenzie, Seaport Global.
Oh, hey, thanks, guys. Congrats on the quarter here. So to put a finer point on the pricing, fuel, sequentially stronger yields in the back half of the year that, you know, you've kind of been referencing to prior questions, you know, can you get the profitability in the fourth quarter? And then, you know, just to put a finer point on cash, you know, excluding accounts receivable, so cash in the checking account, so to speak, short-term investments, you know, where do you expect to end the year?
Okay, let me start with the cash, Dan. Thanks for the congratulations. You know, we really model our cash looking at, you know, cash plus receivables, because I can transform my receivables into cash. I would just waste money doing that by paying, you know, interest expense that I don't need, right? But, you know, like we've said, and I think those of you that are familiar with the way, you know, we sell tickets in Brazil, a lot of the tickets are sold in installments in credit cards. That credit card, you know, once we've flown that ticket, and we fly that ticket fairly quickly because Brazilians buy very close in, right? So the majority of our credit card receivables, we've already flown that revenue. And so I can call, you know, the bank in the morning, and by lunchtime, the money will be in my account. But I'm going to pay, you know, risk-free rate plus, you know, 1 or 2 percentage points, which if I don't need to do that, I won't do that, right? So what we're, you know, and I think we mentioned that in the previous calls. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, the cash position at the end of the year will depend on EBITDA, will depend on oil prices. We feel comfortable that we will have a cash position that is roughly where we ended 2019, if not above, right? We've been actually carrying more cash than we had pre-pandemic. If we have as much cash as we had pre-pandemic, I mean, if some of you may remember that when we were before the pandemic, we were getting some, you know, suggestions from investors to actually start paying dividends and returning cash to shareholders. So the cash position that we had pre-pandemic was available. And so if we can end any quarter after the pandemic with as much cash as we had then, it is a very healthy cash position. So,
and Dan, just to kind of highlight, you know, we were 1.5 turns down in leverage Q1 into Q2. We're going to be down again as we go into 3Q and into 4Q. And so the use of the cash is to deleverage, right? And so, you know, the operation, as I stated earlier, is generating an enormous amount of cash. And so any cash uses above and beyond that is to deleverage the business, which is a good use of cash.
And the 4Q profitability goes to the EBITDA question, right? I mean, you know, if we delivered on $4 billion EBITDA, you know, that will tell you kind of what the 4Q profitability will be. And I think our difficulty, again, with nailing down the short-term profitability kind of leads to, you know, a difficulty in saying is exactly how much. But 4Q is normally our best quarter in the year. Everything that we see points that 4Q 2022 should be the best quarter in the year in terms of profitability. You know, fares are going to be up because of seasonality and because of the strong demand environment, assuming oil and FX stay where they are. Fuel prices that we will be paying in the fourth quarter will be down from what we paid in Q2 and Q3. And so that should point to a very profitable Q4, which should give us very great momentum into 2023 as well, right? So we're very excited about that.
And Brazil's expected to win the World Cup in the fourth quarter as well, Dan. So a lot of people celebrating after that happens. And so we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah. A lot to drive profitability there, right? Well, thanks for that. That I appreciate it. In the script, you mentioned a fleet transformation announcement coming next week, so I'm not sure if the numbers are correct in the financial statements this morning, but as best I can tell, it looks like there's about 133 aircraft on firm order. And I guess my next question is, you know, how many are coming in 2023, how many in 2024, and, you know, how many do you plan to retire, and, you know, what does that imply for 23 growth and CapEx? It's, you know, from the financial statements, it looks like CapEx should be flat next year, but I'm not quite sure how to triangulate, you know, that with the script this morning.
You know, Dan, it's in our best interest to accelerate fleet transformation, and that's what we're going to be looking at. So there's opportunities in the market. You know, we have a lot of aircraft that are going to do lease returns over the next 36 months. And so we're looking at ways to potentially accelerate that. And that's what David was referencing. And David always gets ahead of himself and kind of pushes us there. And so, but there's a lot of good news on that front. So, you know, as we look to get into 2023, I think you're going to see us flying more next generation aircraft, right? And so, as Alex said, maybe net, we're about the same or up a couple of shells, but with a lot more next generation ASKs in there, which again, further pushes our competitive advantage in the market.
Yeah, and I think that's another source of flexibility that we, you know, negotiated during the pandemic. You know, I think we're comfortable keeping the fleet, you know, constant. I think because we have the ability to accelerate deliveries, right? You know, there is certainly enough demand for us to keep the fleet constant. And then, you know, we don't need to overcommit to capacity. And as we see demand firming up, and with that we know that we can count demand, you know, for a long period of time, then we can accelerate additional aircraft from our order book. So I think that's a very, you know, rational way to manage the, you know, possible volatility that we can see in demand in Brazil, right? Kind of, you know, be essentially short ASKs, but have the ability to increase ASKs easily once demand firms up.
Understood. And then how do we think about CapEx next year?
I think if you assume something flat to this year, that's reasonable. As I think most of you know, our CapEx is essentially maintenance CapEx. The delivery of aircraft, in 2022 and 2023 will all be operating leases, so there's no cash outflow regarding those deliveries. And so it's really engine maintenance that we're talking about when we're talking about CapEx. So you can assume something flat this year.
And a portion of that can always be financed as well. You know, I think that's something that you need to keep in your model as well.
Yep, understood. Thanks for the time, you guys. Great job.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michael Linenberg, Deutsche Bank.
Hi, yes, this is actually Shannon Doherty on for Mike. Thanks for taking my questions and great job this quarter. Alex, maybe one for you. I think, you know, around this time last year, you were expecting your unit costs, excluding fuel, to be below 2019 levels for the full year. Now, obviously, a lot has happened since then on the macro side. And, you know, as mentioned before, you know, but with the progress that Azul has made on productivity gains and the cost savings thus far, combined with the 10 to 12% growth rate that you kind of outlaid for 23, would you say that this target is achievable by next year?
Yeah, so I think so. There's certainly, you know, further improvement on our unit costs that we can get just by the fleet transformation. Right? Like I said, we're going to pay less rent on each E2 that comes in than we pay on each E1 that leaves. They will generate more ASKs, they have more seats, and they burn less fuel. And they're more productive as well, right? So we can get more productive at airports. We can get more productive with pilots and flight attendants, right? And then we're going to continue pursuing opportunities like we did over the last couple of years, right? I think we are encouraged by the fact that, you know, even though we consider ourselves an efficient airline, wherever you look, there is opportunity. You know, you can manage processes better. You can invest in technology. There's just a lot of stuff that we're going to, you know, continue pursuing essentially forever, right, to keep our costs as low as possible, because that is, you know, necessary for us to continue expanding margin. So you can count on the unit cost reduction from fleet transformation, and you can count on us continue to pursue other efficiency opportunities around the organization.
You know, I just want to highlight, we've got very engaged crew members. Engaged crew members are helping us deliver a fantastic experience. I mean, you see the problems that the U.S. carriers are having, the European carriers are having right now, and look at what a great operation we're running in more than 150 cities in Brazil with a diversified fleet type. And so, you know, a couple of things, you know, we're building a new hangar, you know, in Confins, right? And so we saw all of the benefit that our hangar provided for us in Campinas. We're going to do that again because we have more work to be done. So there's more things that we can bring in-house at a much cheaper cost. And so I just think having great people that are very engaged in working with us, you know, provides for additional opportunities to make this airline a much more efficient airline going forward.
Got it. Thanks. That's helpful. And, you know, maybe to Abhi or John, are you able to comment on how you plan to use the additional Congonha slots that you expect to get over the, you know, coming years or quarters? And I understand it's a busy airport in downtown Sao Paulo, but, you know, it also has a strong corporate foothold. So any color that you can add would be helpful.
Yeah, hey, Shannon. You know, we haven't obviously finalized our network, but you can expect, you know, the large business markets that we don't currently fly to, and also flying to our hubs. You know, we'd like to connect downtown Sao Paulo to our hubs because that provides connectivity and access to destinations that today those customers don't have. And so it'll be a combination of the two, some in the large business markets, but also some very much flying to our hubs that further strengthens our network.
Hey, Shannon, if I could just add, you know, we've got several customers that experienced Azul for the first time when we went into Congonhas. And now they fly us to Lisbon. They fly us to Fort Lauderdale. They experienced the great product on board the aircraft, the free Wi-Fi, the snacks, the TV. And they said, oh, wow, you know, I'm willing to go out to Viracopos. I'm willing to go to other destinations. They get into your loyalty program. They get your credit card. And so as you expand the Congonhas airport, you know, there's just more and more people that Azul becomes their number one airline. And I think that's fantastic for us going forward.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from Felipe Nielsen, Citi.
Hi, guys. Good morning or afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. So I have two questions on my side. One is regarding a non-ticket revenue. Could you share some your expectations on medium to long-term possibility of revenue generation and revenue growth in terms of those opportunities like cargo, Tudo Azul, and etc. And the second question is regarding expectations on more M&As in South America markets. Thanks.
Yeah, I can start with the first part. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I mean, you know, our business units are growing faster than the airline overall. And so they will continue to contribute in a more meaningful way as we go forward. You know, cargo, for example, almost tripled in revenue from 2Q19 to 2Q22. And we've just actually started to put our E1s, our dedicated Embraer aircraft into service. We have five of them flying right now. And hopefully we'll have more, you know, pretty soon. So we're excited about those opportunities. And as we've said before, there is a large road market that a lot of those goods could be converted to air. You know, for example, we just started with Shopee, for example. You know, and we're starting to onboard other large customers as well. So we're excited about cargo, and we think that growth is going to continue to be, you know, above average for the next few years. Our loyalty program hit a record in July in terms of monthly active users. A lot of engagement. Our billings, you know, ex Azul are up, you know, 60-70%. And so we're seeing a lot of engagement. And as we bring back the network, as we bring back our international network, those customers want to redeem those points. You know, we saw in the pandemic, they were redeeming for coffee machines and AirPods. and now they're redeeming for travel, and that trend is going to continue. And I think probably, you know, the highlight so far this year has been our vacations business. We'll have 2,000 flights dedicated this summer season. It's almost going to be doubling this year versus 2019. And just a lot of new city pairs, a lot of new network opportunities. And as we've said before, this allows us to fly the aircraft on the weekends that other times that we don't have those opportunities. So it's very accretive in other ways as well. So, yeah, so I think those businesses are going to grow at a faster rate than the airline overall and keep contributing.
Yeah, as for the M&A, you know, we've never felt better about our standalone plan. You know, keep in mind, this airline is 50% larger in terms of revenue than it was in 2019. We've got this new generation fleet coming on. We now have access to the Congonhas Airport. So we feel very good about where we are. Obviously, we'll always look at opportunities, right, that exist in the market. And so we think some of the moves that we've seen in Latin America are very healthy. We think all airlines in Latin America need to focus on profitability, and that's a good thing going forward. And so really no news, and we're focusing on our standalone business at this time.
Great. Many thanks for the question. The answer is good.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lucas Barbosa, Santander.
Good afternoon, everyone. Congratulations for the results. John, I hope you're right about Brazil winning the World Cup. So I have a question on balance sheet, maybe for Alex. Is the ATL line expansion just a reflection of the normal business seasonality and future price expansion, or was there any campaign that accelerated forward bookings? Maybe another way to ask it is, do you think you can maintain the 4 billion reais of ATL by year end, given the increase in ticket prices and higher capacity going forward? And I'll do my second question later. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Lucas. I think if you look at the ATL in terms of, you know, days of sales, you're going to see that since fourth quarter, it's essentially flat, right? It may go up a little bit, down a little bit, but it's kind of hovering around the same number. So most of the increase in ATL is the increase in sales, really. And there's some seasonality, right? For example, normally in Q1, we don't sell a lot, but we fly a lot. And normally in Q2, we sell a lot, but don't fly a lot. So it's normal also for you to see an increase in ATL in the quarters where sales are strong, but we don't fly as much. So, yeah, we believe that, if you look at the ATL in terms of, you know, days of sales, you can expect something pretty constant and something. So that means that the balance in ATL should actually grow as we continue growing our revenues.
Yeah, I just want to highlight another thing, and Abhi will give the exact numbers, but, you know, what percentage of our international network was being sold in first quarter and second quarter versus third quarter and fourth quarter, right? And so as the restrictions to fly internationally have dropped in Europe and the United States, we've seen an uptick. And as you go into the third and fourth quarter, you know, international revenues come on very strong. We haven't talked about that. That's obviously very positive for ATL because those bookings are a lot farther out.
Yeah, overall, we're going to be finishing the first half of the year. We were probably at 40 to 50% international recovery. We will finish the year closer to 80 to 90% international recovery and getting to 100% by first quarter of 2023. So that's going to be very helpful in driving those forward bookings as well.
Super clear. Thanks for the answer. And since I raised the point on forward bookings, on the first question, can you give us some color on how you're seeing the pricing on forward bookings? In the second quarter, the PRASK was 20% higher than 2Q19. From what you're seeing on booking so far, can we see a comparison to pre-COVID PRASK becoming even higher than the next quarters?
Yes. Our expectation is that 3Q will be even higher than the number the 25% in 2Q.
Super clear. Thanks very much. And John, I hope you're right about it. The World Cup. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pablo Monsiver, Barclays.
Hi, guys. Apologies for asking one more question. But I was just taking a look at your balance sheet, and you are putting something called debt or risk for 660 million reais. I just want to have more color on what is exactly exactly is this metric that you're putting? Thank you.
Hey, Pablo. Yeah, it's, you know, what we mentioned, you know, a few calls ago, a few answers ago, this is, we can get support from our suppliers, for example, you know, to get better terms. But sometimes, you know, there's a win-win that can happen for both us and the suppliers, because we have, we essentially pay a lower interest than our suppliers. And sometimes suppliers have a much harder access to capital than we do, right? So this is essentially supplier financing, where, you know, sometimes I can negotiate an extension with a supplier from 30 days to maybe as long as 120 days, but then that supplier can go and finance themselves, you know, with a bank. We're essentially using bank risk, so that also shows our access to credit, you know, directly with the banks, right? So it's essentially another source of capital, another source of cash that we can access if we need to.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Guilherme Mendes, JP Morgan.
Hey guys, good afternoon. A quick one here, just in terms of fuel hedging, if you could comment on your fuel hedging strategy going forward, that would be great. Thank you.
Hey Guilherme, you know, we have a policy that we can hedge up to 40% of our next 12 months exposure. Right now we're at about, you know, high teens, you know, 15, a little bit over 15%. We've been using forward contracts, you know, up to this point. And that's the reason why you're seeing the big positive result that we had, you know, and this is actual cash that we can access, you know, if we need to. You know, we look a lot at what the industry is doing, right? You know, we're not trying to convince you that we're going to guess better than the market whether oil prices are going to go up or down. We essentially want to protect the, you know, tickets that we have already sold, which have their, you know, obviously their fares are already locked, and to any kind of volatility in fuel prices that we may have between selling that ticket and flying that ticket. But we also look a lot at what the industry is doing. And the industry is fairly under-hedged right now. I think overall, we look at hedging as insurance. You know, we expect to lose money in insurance. We expect to lose money in hedging. Not a lot on either one, you know, but it's not a profit, you know, line for any airline. You know, if you can make money guessing whether fuel prices are going to go up or down, you know, you shouldn't be running an airline. So, you know, I think you can expect a similar approach to fuel hedges, but we'll also be monitoring what the industry is doing overall.
We're just frustrated we didn't have hedge accounting in the quarter, to be honest with you.
Yeah, super clear. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's question and answer session. I would like to invite Mr. John to proceed with his closing statements. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have any follow-up questions, obviously our IR team and Alex, Avi, myself will be available, and we appreciate your your time today and look forward to meeting you at the conferences. Take care.
Thank you. This concludes the Azul's audio conference call for today. Thank you very much for your participation. Have a good day.